Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, providing more than 41,000 jobs in the production of wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details at choosewood.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Last March, Lieutenant Colonel Troy Doyle retired from the St. Louis County Police Department after almost 31 years there. He didn't leave law enforcement, nor did he go very far away. When he was sworn in as the new chief of police in Ferguson on March 27, 2023, he took up a role and challenge that comes with particularly high visibility, expectation, and potential. A year into the job, what's it been like for Chief Doyle and the community he serves? And how much has changed since Michael Brown Jr. was killed by Darren Wilson, a former police officer, almost 10 years ago? Chief Troy Doyle joins us in studio today to talk about that and more. Chief Doyle, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Now, the first year on the job, this is what we'll be discussing, but I want to go to the way that you've been described, and that is as reform-minded. What changes have you been able to implement in the past year, Chief?
Yeah, thank you for the question. So, you know, one of the big things, you know, coming to Ferguson, we all know the history, what took place in 2014 with the uprising. When I got to the Ferguson Police Department, one of the things I initially recognized was the culture within the police department, a culture which they seen the federal consent decree as like punitive, so to speak. And one of the things I wanted to do was try to change that narrative and show them that, you know, the consent decree was a benefit to the city, you know, because at the end of the day, it's going to put us in a position where we're going to have the best policies and procedures probably in the region, mm-hmm. you know, once we come into compliance with this consent decree. So it's just changing the culture within the police department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is that sensibility part of what appealed to you about taking on the role of the chief of Ferguson's police department?
What really appealed to me is that if you know my history, I always look forward to a challenge. And I knew that this here would be a huge challenge, you know, being that it's the Ferguson Police Department. And again, I knew that that city was in need of some leadership, and I wanted to take upon that challenge.
Mm-hmm. What is that history?
My history is being a reformer and a fixer, so to speak, as people would describe it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that we noted in the introduction and that you've just brought up as well. You know, August is going to mark a significant anniversary, you know, 10 years since Michael Brown Jr., an 18-year-old black teen, was fatally shot by Darren Wilson, who is was a Ferguson police officer and a white officer. And then what followed was a movement whose shorthand became the name of the city where you're now serving as the police chief. What is it that you find yourself reflecting on as this anniversary approaches?
Right. So, ironically, during the time of the uprising in 2014, August 9th of 2014, I was actually a lieutenant colonel with the St. Louis County Police Department. So I was one of the individuals that was standing out there on the front lines with a helmet, shield, and, you know, taking water bottles and things of that nature. However, it was a difficult time for not only for me, but for everyone in the police department. But me coming from the communities where I was oftentimes being stopped and harassed by law enforcement, I knew the dynamics on both sides and I understood what was going on. So me taking this current role now brings – I'm able to give a perspective to the police officers there in the city there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And insofar as – the dynamics go. I mean, how would you characterize what they were at that time?
Oh, it was very chaotic at the time because during that time, the police department, and I'm speaking specifically of St. Louis County, no one ever prepared for anything that was going to be of that nature or that scale or whatever. So that was the dynamics with that. And then at the same time, especially for minority police officers at the time, I mean, we had to have some healthy discussions amongst each other, you know, because many of us had went through some of the same things that the activists and the, you know, the protesters were protesting about.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to what extent then did the Ferguson uprising affect the way that you saw your role or saw the role generally of law enforcement in a community?
Obviously, I mean, it prompted a lot of discussions, and I think it not only with me but with my comrades across the country. I mean, we started having conversations about how law enforcement needs to change. And I think, you know, in fairness to law enforcement, we were all trained to be, you know, these tough guys. You go in these neighborhoods, you take care of business, and you go home. But I think that we failed to realize that there was a need in the community for sensitivity and, you know, cultural awareness and dealing with those type of issues.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about that, because you had talked about some of the things that you went through mm-hmm. when you were young mm-hmm. and that did lead you into this particular career. I mean, what were some of the things that you experienced as a young person mm-hmm. in particular that protesters also were bringing to the streets as they were out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a young teenager growing up in the St. Louis region, you know, during, especially in the 80s, there was always, you know, the perspective of if you're a young African-American male or female driving through areas like North County, your Jennings, Florence, and Ferguson, some of those areas, you try to stay away from them because it was a highly likelihood that you were going to get stopped. I was one of those individuals, I might have got the trophy for it. I was getting stopped constantly.
Oh, wow. And how did you feel at that time?
At the time, again, being young, you don't know any better, so I never went home and told my parents about what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, I got tired of the harassment. And just a quick story, there used to be a store called Service Merchandise back then. And I went and took my paycheck and bought a radar detector, figuring that it would give me serve as an early warning signal so when law enforcement come around, I'd go the opposite way.
Mm-hmm. And so becoming an officer, was that kind of an obvious thing for you to do, given your experience, or was it something that you wrestled with for a while? And how did your family respond to your choice of career?
My family was very supportive from the get-go when I decided to take this role. I never again had, I didn't see the profession as bad. I just seen certain officers as being bad.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I was young, 21 years old, but my mindset at that time was join the police department and be part of the change.
Yeah. Now, recognizing, Chief, that you are in a different role mm-hmm. and department than you were in 2014, do you approach what you're doing right now in Ferguson differently than the way that you approach things 10 years in the past?
I think so. And I think 2014 awakened many of us in law enforcement. And the good thing I believe that the city of Ferguson is getting with me coming in as a chief is that I had these experiences as a youth. I've been on the other side with St. Louis County Police Department on the, you know, law enforcement end of dealing with this. I can bridge those different perspectives together to be able to bring in, you know, my ideas and solutions that I believe that should be happening in the city of Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mike Brown Jr.'s killing, it sparked calls to shift the role of officers
yes.
from, you know, warriors to guardians. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that the training of officers here in our region since then reflects that?
I think so. Obviously, there's a whole lot more training that needs to take place. But one of the beautiful things about being on a federal consent decree, they demand a certain amount of training. So the Ferguson police officers have gone through diversity training, implicit bias training, use of force training. As I mentioned early on, once we get through this consent decree, the Ferguson Police Department is probably going to be one of the most trained police departments in the region.
Mm-hmm. How have officers responded to that? I mean, it sounds like those kinds of trainings, you know, DEI, that should have been happening already.
Absolutely. And I think, again, No one paid attention to that prior to 2014. I know the culture now within the Ferguson Police Department. They understand. They know that this is important. And the only way we able to fight crime, we have to have these understandings of the communities in which we are serving.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned culture a little bit earlier. I mean, is there a specific example of the way training that you received at the beginning of your career differs from the training that officers are getting now, such that it does support a different kind of culture?
Yes. So when I started law enforcement back in 89, again, I mean, we didn't really have too much cultural diversity training, so to speak. But again, as the years progress, you know, most departments start introducing diversity training, but that diversity training was more so of don't do this, don't do that. It never went to the point of trying to understand culture. So I think after 2014, that was, again, if you can take any positive out of what took place there, most police departments then realized the importance of, look, we need to truly understand the community in which we're serving. We need to understand, you know, why people, you know, behave or act in a certain way.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Are there some very specific ways that you've made the Ferguson Police Department's culture more akin to what you'd want to see? And this is understanding that change does not happen overnight. Mm-hmm. But in the past year, I mean, are there any examples of situations that you can share?
So, for example, traffic enforcement was a huge issue in Ferguson. When I came there, every resident, whether you're black or white, all complained about traffic and the lack thereof traffic enforcement in the city. So we came up with several traffic enforcement initiatives within the police department. But when we did those traffic enforcement, a vast majority of it was geared towards educating the public. You know, hey, you have to get your tags, you know, updated or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Or if you were speeding, you know, we gave more warnings than we did citations. So it was more of an educational type of thing than, you know, punitive.
We're going to take a very quick break here, but we will be back shortly to continue this conversation with Chief Troy Doyle of the Ferguson Police Department. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to sustainable and sound conservation of the state's forests, which support more than 41,000 Missouri jobs, resulting in a $10 billion industry. Choosewood.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Chief Troy Doyle, head of the Ferguson Police Department. We're talking today about his first year serving as chief and what's changed in time since he's been with the department. Now, before the break, you had spoken about the consent decree and how it was sort of being regarded by some as being more punitive than maybe instructive or generative. And tomorrow happens to mark exactly 6 years since the City of Ferguson and the United States Department of Justice entered into that consent decree. And just as a reminder, that agreement focused on addressing Ferguson police and court policies and practices that the DOJ investigated in 2015 and found unconstitutional. So to what degree was the consent decree that is being talked about when you entered into the department last year?
Again, when I entered to the department, I had an opportunity to sit down with each squad. So each basically go to all the roll calls and have a conversation with the officers. And I would say 85 to 90% of the officers seeing the consent decree is more of like a punishment for the department, which was unfortunate, you know. What I had to do is explain to them how this is going to make us better. Took a little bit of time, but I start over time, some of the officers start believing into what it is that we were trying to do. And as a result of that, we've been able to increase staffing as such. When I arrived there, we were probably at somewhere around 49% staff of the police department. Right now, we're like 76, 78% staff. Along with, we probably have 57, 58% minority representation now, which was not the case in 2014.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, are there still holdouts in the department? You know, and if so, how is it that you are approaching those officers? I mean, any kind of culture change does not happen quickly.
Right.
So how are you sort of chipping away at that?
I think, and not to toot my own horn, I think I came there with somewhat of a reputation, and officers knew who I was. And my history is centered around community engagement. And I think they knew that about me. Most of the officers have bought in, like I mentioned, to what is it that we're trying to do. One of the things, too, that I introduced to them was that we went through a whole rebranding with the police department. So if you think about the Ferguson Police Department in 2014, the powder blue shirts, the old patches and whatnot, one of the things I did was put together a little small committee with all the officers. We changed what the patch looks like. We changed what the uniform looked like. We got new badges. We even changed the outfitting of the look of the police cars. And the thought process behind that was that essentially Ferguson is a new police department. We only have 5 officers remaining since 2014. So essentially we are a brand new police department. Mm-hmm. And I wanted this change to reflect that.
Yeah. Did the community notice that?
They have. That was one of the things that they praised us for because they thought that was a good thing for us.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to make sure that we touch on a couple of things that are related to the consent decree.
Sure.
Before we move to some of the recruitment and the community efforts that you've been engaged in. Now, the 2015 DOJ investigation had found evidence that the Ferguson Police Department was using wanteds, and it's a system that allows police to make arrests without a warrant or probable cause, to make arrests that are ultimately, they're unconstitutional. So the settlement with Ferguson, it required a 1-year moratorium on wanteds, which was not to be reinstated without significant modifications. So I do want to note here, too, that Ferguson was then among many police departments in the region participating in that system. Where is the Ferguson department now on wanteds, Chief?
So we don't do wanteds anymore now. So one of the things that we do now in conjunction with our prosecuting attorney's office is that if we know or get information about someone committing a crime, the practice before was, even if we didn't have evidence, they just put a wanted out for a person and hope that they get stopped by someone and they interviewed, whatnot. Now what we do in conjunction with the prosecuting attorney's office is that we try to exhaust all efforts in attempting to interview that person. So if we can't get a hold of them at their residence, their place of employment, through relatives, that's only when we will put, it's not even a one, it's called a person of interest, out in the Regis system where we would then try to contact that individual, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
So one of the reasons we're talking, mm-hmm. what happened in Ferguson, the shooting of Mike Brown Jr. Mm-hmm. by a police officer, and just this week, mm-hmm. a Ferguson officer shot an 18-year-old outside a Quick Trip, mm-hmm. and you told KSDK mm-hmm. that the officer fired his gun after witnessing the suspect shooting another man. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the department protocol mm-hmm. regarding situations wherein officers are allowed to fire their weapons?
Yeah, so anything that threatens that officer's life or the life of the general public, that officer is obligated and required to use deadly force if necessary.
Mm-hmm. And what is the training that officers are receiving?
So,
yeah, around like determining what do I do? Like, do I operate in a defensive manner, in offensive manner, that is, or in self-defense?
Right. Obviously we're training a number of different things, and de-escalation is part of that, along with firearms training. However, with that being said, we also have to act whenever we see something, you know, that's immediate. And officers oftentimes have to make split-second decisions, and without going into much of the details, because this is still an investigation, this mm-hmm. was an incident where an officer had to make a split-second decision.
Right. And speaking of investigation, mm-hmm. who is conducting that investigation?
St. Louis County Police Department. And the reason I did that is because I didn't want to investigate this internally. I want to be more transparent and have an outside agency come in and look at it.
Mm-hmm. That is a great segue, because earlier I had noted, you know, you didn't make a huge geographical move to take up the position of chief in Ferguson, but it was a significant change, nevertheless. Prior to taking on this position, you spent more than three decades with the St. Louis County Police Department. Chief, how did those years of experience in St. Louis County inform the way that you approach your current position, you know, how you approached it on day one, or maybe even before, but in ways that people can like see and feel?
So I went to work for St. Louis County back in 1992. So I had an opportunity to work for, I believe, four different police chiefs during that span. So I had an opportunity to kind of, I guess, lack of a better word, learn from some of their good points and took away some of their bad points, too. So I think that experience of being able to work for four different police chiefs put me in a good position to come over to Ferguson and take what I learned good and apply it to the city of Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. No, let's move to recruitment.
Yeah.
One of the things that you've been able to do, as you mentioned earlier, only five officers who were with the department during the 2014 uprising remain with the department now. Does that mean that your department is fairly young?
My department is real young.
What is the average age?
Without having the numbers, just speculating here, I would say the average age is probably late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are some of the similarities and differences that you see between people who are applying for positions today as opposed to those who are coming into the police profession 10 years ago?
So again, 10 years ago, when people applied for police officers, again, I think that it attracted more of the, lack of a better word, the macho type, the people that want to come in and wear the badge and the gun. They want to go out there and police the community. I think, at least from what I'm seeing, the people who are applying now, they want to come in. And when you interview them, they're mentioning things like, you know, I want to be involved with the community. I want to be involved with community engagement. I want to be a bike patrol officer. So the whole machoism or whatever part of that is not as much now. You know, it's people want to do more of the, hey, I want to get out to in a community type thing.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ferguson Police Chief Troy Doyle, who spent decades with the St. Louis County Police Department and is now heading Ferguson's department. And it's been just 1 year since you've been doing that. We were just talking about new recruits. What is it that new recruits are telling you, or what is it that you're hearing from them about why they want a career in law enforcement? And I mean, is there anything at all that's notable or surprising about what you are hearing?
Yeah, again, our department is probably one of the more diverse departments in the region now. Many of the officers that I've hired lately have been minority officers. And when you speak with them, many of them either been through being harassed by law enforcement or either had a family member or a friend that went through that. So many of them are coming in the profession, want to be part of the change. Mm-hmm. So that's very encouraging to hear.
When you say minority, mm-hmm. what do you mean?
So I'm talking about black officers. I probably, percentage-wise, I imagine I probably have more female officers than most police departments, which is a good thing for
mm-hmm.
us. I mean, we have a vast majority of female officers on the police department.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And are many of them from the St. Louis area?
Yes.
What benefit does that have?
Again, they're familiar with the area. And one of the things I really do appreciate, especially with female officers, not that male officers don't do it, but females usually can de-escalate things a lot quicker than males. I mean, they understand the situation more. And I've learned that, especially on like family disturbance type of things. They know how to de-escalate things pretty mm-hmm. well. That's a good skill set that they bring to the table.
Yeah. So last summer, Chief, your department had 13 vacancies, and to fill those jobs, the city offered a $1,000 reward to anyone who refers a successful new recruit. Mm-hmm. How did that effort go?
That boosted our recruitment numbers. That's the reason why we're 76% now. I think some people took that challenge, and And again, part of my thought process was that, you know, oftentimes it's easy to criticize law enforcement, but I challenge the community, you know, be part of the problem. If you got a family member or someone you know that you think would benefit the Ferguson Police Department, mm-hmm. refer them my way and right. we'll pay you $1,000.
And be part of the solution.
And be part of the solution.
Right. So when you say successful, mm-hmm. what defines a successful police officer?
So someone who was hired, made it through the background investigation, went through the police academy, and successfully made it off probation. Mm-hmm. And our probation is a year long.
A year long. Yes. Okay. And is the city still offering $1,000?
We are.
You are? Okay. Yes. Community mm-hmm. is a big part of what your ethos is. Mm-hmm. You've talked about the importance of strengthening bond between police and community. Mm-hmm. How is it that you've worked toward that goal concretely?
Yes. So I think, I mean, it's no secret, you know, there were, you know, racial issues within the city of Ferguson. When I attend community meetings now in Ferguson, I try to give the message of, you know, we all grew up differently. We all see the world a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, we all live in this community and we all want the same thing. And what I've learned is that whether you're black, white, male, female, whatever, everybody wants to be safe. They want safe neighborhoods. They want the kids to be able to go outside and play. And that's what I try to preach when I go to these neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Where are you meeting with people?
Churches, coffee shops, just, you know, different places within Ferguson where they're having, you know, neighborhood association meetings.
Mm-hmm. And of those five officers who are still here mm-hmm. from 2014, mm-hmm. how have they responded to this approach?
The feedback that I've got has been very positive. They thought that this change was needed. They're all on board with my plans in regards to, you know, keeping Ferguson safe, but at the same time, engaging in our community in a productive, safe manner.
Mm-hmm. Is there an example of an interaction that you've either been part of or observed that, I mean, 10 years ago probably just would not have been possible?
Yes. Again, when I arrived, we had a homeless woman that was sleeping along South Florissen Road. And one of my officers, I observed him go buy this lady some coffee, you know, give it to her. I don't think that would have took place 10 years ago. I think people would have just drove past this lady and would never thought, you know, nothing else about it.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to skepticism, mm-hmm. how is it that you have overcome some doubt among members of the community?
Explain to me a little bit more.
So you're engaging in these efforts, mm-hmm. but part of what I think the uprising 10 years ago illuminated was how much distrust there was on the side of community toward law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So you come in and now, you know, there are new uniforms, there are new badges, like all of this, the cars look different. Mm-hmm. But I'd imagine that there's still some people who are like, I don't know if this is, like, is this legit? How have you dealt with that?
So absolutely, and I have to be realistic too. I mean, there's always going to be a level of criticism with law enforcement, and that's expected. What I'm hoping to accomplish or hoping that people see is that Ferguson is a little bit different. And an example of that is that we answered 30,000 calls, calls for service last year in the city of Ferguson. And out of those 30,000 calls of service, less than 1% of those resulted in the use of force. Mm-hmm. I will hope that that conveys over to community that this is not a police department that's heavy-handed, that's looking to go out and terrorize our community. This is a police department through the requirements of the consent decree, has used this training with de-escalation and use of force to be able to, you know, have that number to where it's at. And it's something that I'm very proud of.
Yeah. So looking forward, you know, we started the conversation talking about reforms. There are things that you have implemented since you've taken up this position of chief. Between now and April 2025, mm-hmm. what do you see as the primary focus for the department?
Again, more community engagement. I don't think you can have enough of that. It's not only just community engagement. I don't think we need a lot of finger painting at this particular point. We need to have candid conversations. And I think it's extremely important that the community know exactly what this police department is doing. I can stand up at a podium and say anything, but it's important for me, especially this year, the people to see the actual changes that are taking place, to see the caliber of officers that we're bringing in.
Mm-hmm. And by this year, you mean in the second year?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Now, you're working to get the Ferguson Police Department's the accreditation restored. And less than 1% of police agencies in the U.S. hold some form of that. What would accreditation mean to your department chief and to the community that it serves?
I think what the accreditation would show to our residents is that this is a department that is serious about, you know, being professional. We en route to that. I think that the things that we're doing here, hopefully, God willing, that by March of next year, hopefully we should be a fully accredited police department.
Mm-hmm. Chief Doyle, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to conservation and careful management of the state's forests to make them more resilient and better habitats for wildlife. ChooseWood.com.